Sometimes I'm not so technical, but I'm getting better. What the hell? My name is Chris R. I'm from Ingram, Texas. Very grateful, recovered alcoholic. I got a sober date on November 13th, 1987. And that's a miracle for me, for heaven's sakes. I sure do appreciate it. Allie, thank you so much for asking us to speak, and Myers and I, and Doug, thanks for that nice introduction. Of course, I remember you. And that's the coolest thing about these Zoom meetings, guys. I know I got to say it, you know, I mean, I was the first one, 2001, when the Zoomers started. I mean, we got our fourth edition out, and in those forwards in the front, it was talking about modem to modem, you know, and I mean, we were laughing our butts off. It's like, yeah, anybody's ever going to have an AA meeting on a computer. I mean, it is ridiculous. And, you know, and here we are. And I entered the water real timidly. And I got to say, it's just so cool. I'm sitting there going back through the pages, looking at you guys. I mean, I know a bunch of y'all in here over the years. Hell, I've been traveling a bunch and have gotten to meet a lot of you. And got some of you looking pretty good. And except Myers, he looks like me. So it's just nice to see all of y'all guys. I'm delighted to be here. There's a stupid motorcycle out there. I'm sorry. I'm right there on the road, so it gets a little noisy. The only bad thing about this is I don't get to get in an airport and go fly and see Toronto. I've been to Toronto a few times, and it's like, God dang it. It's one of the prettiest cities I've ever been in. And I stayed right downtown one time and listen to the call of worship over the speakers downtown. It was just such a, you know, I'm from Ingram, Texas. Y'all look it up on the map. We're about 60 miles northwest of San Antonio. We're just a few, actually about 150 miles from the geographic center of Texas. I mean, this is the Appalachia of Texas right here. I mean, this is country as it gets right here, you know, and seeing Toronto for the first time was pretty amazing. So bless y'all. And maybe I will get to see y'all soon. Hope so. Before I get to speak, as always, I want to try to make this real clear. And I know I'll say it again in the morning. Myers and I get to do a little workshops tomorrow, and some of y'all maybe will get a chance to come see us again. And I'll say it again then, but all I intend to do tonight and tomorrow is get a chance to share my experience, and my experience may be different than your experience. So please, if I say anything that you don't agree with or offend you, I give me the opportunity to make amends. It's not my intention to be controversial, whatever, but I just, old timer one time told me, he says, if you want to offend anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous, say anything. And it was always somebody going to get upset about something. So the simple fact that I introduced myself as a recovered alcoholic will send some people to the edge of a cliff. You know, it's like, oh yeah, how could he say that? You know, we'll always be recovering. No, comma, we won't. You're either going to recover or you're not. Anyway, that's what the book says. And I'm a little big book guy. So y'all bless you. And please, that's okay. You're welcome to disagree with anything I got to say. But I'm right and you're wrong. So anyway, we'll go. I'm looking out this window right here and I can see I'm right out on the Guadalupe River. And I'm about 5 miles upstream from where I took my first drink. And pretty cool to think about it. I was away from a long time, but I ended up moving back in the 90s and been here ever since. And me and a friend of mine, it was so funny. I got to see this guy a couple of weeks ago. I hadn't seen him in 20 years. And all of a sudden I get to see him in the post office 2 weeks ago. But he and I got a bottle of Boone's Farm apple wine from someplace. I have no idea where he got it. We were, I was 17, I guess. And this was January 1971. It was the month that Bill Wilson passed away. I took my first drink. And we sat up next to one of these big old 700-year-old cypress trees right down on the river and drank that bottle of Boone's Farm. And he didn't want the rest of it, and I finished it off. And it wasn't one of those great big bottles you got to hold with two hands, guys. This was a little pint. And just enough, I had just enough alcohol for the first time to start feeling the effect of it. And I remember walking back across that field, back up to our little house on Goat Creek Road. And I remember walking up that front porch. I remember thinking, this is why my dad drinks. And because I got to tell you, it was the first time I ever remember being completely, totally comfortable in my own skin. I'd never had any booze, guys. I'm going to tell you, I'm not one of those that want to stamp out alcohol, because I got to tell you, if it hadn't been for alcohol, I don't know if I would have graduated from high school. I was a miserable little cuss. Myers and I were born, out in Odessa, Texas, out in the oil fields. My father was a printer. He was one of the nicest, kindest men you'd ever come across. He was a craftsman, and he taught Myers the bookbinding business, he was a sweetheart, but he was an alcoholic. We would call him a periodic. He would stay sober for long periods of time, and then he'd bring home a six-pack of Slitz beer. And do they still make that? Any of y'all ever seen it? Slitz beer. I don't know. But that's what he drank. And we knew the siege was on, because he'd be more or less every night when he'd get home, he'd be drinking. And you know, there was no weird, goofy stuff in our family. My little sister, a couple of months ago, sent us a little packet of pictures that she got from mom after she passed away. And I'd never seen these pictures. There's one of us up there in Odessa, Texas, Myers and my two sisters and my mom and dad. You know, we're sitting out in the backyard on a blanket and little picnic out in the backyard. And I mean, I don't remember. We were kids at the time, but it was an idyllic picture. And that's what our family was. I mean, mom was a professional artist, and we were on the front row of the Baptist church every time the door opened up. Genetics, you could give my family tree a kick, and I guarantee you the little alcoholics would drop out of the tree. You know, a lot of ancestors on both sides of the family were alcoholics, but that's where we got it. My twin brother and I got it, and you'll hear from him later tonight. And my two sisters didn't. They still freak us out every Christmas when they get together. We've been trying to get them drunk for 30 years, and they won't do it. I don't know. They'll drink a couple of drinks and say, no, I'm starting to feel it. And that's it. That means they're good. They're done. And I don't understand that. They got to be adopted. They can't come from this family. But anyway, Pops moved us here to the Hill Country as early as he could. And it was about 1964 when we moved here. And I lost my eye in a rock fight out there in West Texas. And he loved the river. He liked to fish. And so he moved us down here where the water was. And that's where I grew up. We graduated from high school, and it was just typical country town, guys. On the weekends, we'd get some kegs and put it out on the property we owned out in the country and have a little bonfire and everybody make fools of themselves. But it was just no big deal, guys. Nobody was getting in trouble and robbing liquor stores. We were doing okay. And I wanted to be a professional chef Myers went to school a year, and then after graduation, I stayed in the Hill Country and worked a couple of cooking jobs and had an opportunity to get in this apprenticeship program in Houston, Texas. Myers had an old Volkswagen Beetle. Y'all remember those? He had a bumper sticker on the back that said, "Get drunk and be somebody." I have no idea where he got that bumper sticker, but we got on that and drove to Houston, and we were going to be somebody, I got to tell you. And we weren't even old enough to buy booze, guys, but the next door neighbors were. And so we'd buy, get them to get us a case of beer at a time, and we'd drink. I'll keep saying this, guys. I don't want to drive you crazy. We weren't robbing liquor stores. We weren't getting drunk driving charges. We were holding it together pretty good. Sometimes in the big book, it paints this picture that every time you drink, you lose control and drink until you can't drink no more. That's called end-stage alcoholism. A lot of people don't ever get there for long periods of time. So, you know, if we're trying to scare people in the rooms by our stupid stories, sometimes it works against us because they haven't experienced some of that stuff. Anyway, I had a bunch of years coming at me, and I was pretty successful in the food business. I don't know what to tell you. I started doing these things. I don't know how to explain. I started doing these things called geographics. You know, I worked at that job there in Houston for a couple of years and was pretty good as far as it went. You know, we had a nice little apartment with a bunch of guys in there we were having fun, but the depression started kicking my butt, and I started moving around a bunch. That's the cool thing about being in the food business. If any of you guys have been in the industry ever, y'all know what that's about. It doesn't make it darn what, I've never been fired from a job, but I quit a whole bunch of jobs, you know, and I'd leave. If I thought you were coming close to me about my drinking, I'd split. And everybody accepted drinking on the job. Everybody in those kitchens were drinking. And it's okay. We just, they didn't care. As long as you showed up and did what you were supposed to do, they just didn't care much. And I understand they do now, but back in the day, they didn't. And I left and went to Austin, Texas, and was at a country club, and got my first sous chef's job at a country club. And was there a couple of years, and I went to Atlanta, and hang on just a sec. First time I ever had to do that. Somebody was at the door. I hope it wasn't. Yeah. Publisher Clearinghouse. Ended up back and forth. I left Texas one time with a clear understanding that I needed to get out of Texas because that's why I was drinking so much. And went to Atlanta, was there for about 9 months, and then crawled back across the border to Texas. I was so bummed when I got to Atlanta and find out that they didn't sell alcohol, any alcohol, on Sundays ever. It's like, what kind of a... I didn't last long in Atlanta. That's all I can say. And it came back to Texas. I was in and out of Houston a bunch. And on one of the trips back into Houston, Myers is bartending at this restaurant down by the, y'all remember the Astrodome? You remember Reed? It used to be the eighth wonder of the world or something like that. Now you look at it, they got a stadium that you could put three Astrodomes in. It's just crazy. But this little restaurant was an old country Western place. And it was out there. You could literally in the shadow of the Astrodome. He was tending bar there, and I was drinking in that bar, and there was a cocktail waitress there I wanted to marry bad. And I sat out there in that parking lot and bargained with God and told God if I'd clean up my act, if he'd let this lady marry me, and she did. But I didn't keep up my end of the bargain very much, that's for sure. We had a nice little wedding, and I immediately moved her up to North Texas to be close. Myers had since moved up to North Texas and had a little bindery up there, and I wanted to be closer to them, and got me a job at a country club, and it's the same stuff, guys. Bought a house, and my first house, and the outside got a little pickup, and the outside, everything looked great in my little life, and on the inside, I thought I was going to come unglued. And the depression's kicking my butt, and I'm seeing doctors for the depression, and I'm starting to add some medications to my regime. I get, guys, over the years, it was just, I still think I'm doing okay, 'cause I'm not getting in trouble. And I came home one night, I had an opportunity to run this little restaurant up north of Denton, and it was a pretty good opportunity for me. I was up there with the owner, and we were we'd been drinking all day long trying to set this kitchen up. And this was back in the early 80s. I don't know if any of y'all remember the early 80s in the United States. I don't know about in other parts of the world. We had this movie on the show on TV called Miami Vice. Y'all ever remember that? Yeah. Everybody in there. Yeah. Some of you guys recognize that. Yeah. We all thought we were Don Johnson. You know, we were all little drug runners, and yeah, everybody, even people that didn't drink were doing cocaine. Y'all thought, it was crazy. And I know this is AA, but those outside issues started to play a part. We're doing some of that stuff at work. And I came home and I don't remember what the fight was about, but we had a little pushing match. And I raised my voice, and it's kind of something that we learned not to do. Sitting on the front row of the Baptist church. Guys, I don't know where it came from. I was loaded and scared her to death, and it freaked me out. She asked me to leave, and I did. Came back a few hours later and apologized for being a poot. And she just asked, she said, why? What happened? And I finally told her. She knew I was drinking, but she didn't know how much I was drinking. She was convinced my problem was that I was drinking too fast. And she kept trying to slow me down, you know. Anyway, we had all kinds of tricks, but bless her heart. I she didn't know about the other outside issue stuff. And I told her I would quit. And she said, no, really, if you want to stay married to me, you're going to have to stop. And I made her a promise that I would. And I can't not say it, guys. Y'all have heard me, some of y'all, a million times. When I looked her in the eyes with tears in my eyes and told her that I was going to quit drinking, I meant it. I didn't want to end up like my dad. I didn't want to drink like that. And I didn't want to ruin this relationship. And a week and a half later, I poured out everything. I got rid of the booze. I called Alcoholics Anonymous. A week and a half later, the owner guy asked, can we stay after work? And he gave me a beer in front of me. We went over some function sheets. And I drank a beer. And I'm patting myself on the back as I walk home, walk in the front door. And she smelled the booze on my breath. And that was it. You know, it was the end of that marriage, pretty much. And, you know, I spent the next couple of months trying to save the marriage, and going to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I got to go back and hit it. Y'all need to hear it, because I know some of y'all can identify with this. There's always somebody that wants to make a joke about that. You know, if an alcoholic's mouth's moving, he's lying. You know, and I'm not saying that's just not true. And I think it's disrespectful. So if you're saying it, quit. we're not a bunch of misfits in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a couple of people. I guarantee you, we got 457 people in this room right now. Some of the people that are in this gathering are goofy to the core. I understand. There's no doubt about that. But there's some of the finest people on earth in this gathering. When I looked her in the face and promised her, I meant it. I didn't understand that I didn't have the power to manage the decision to stay stopped. So many people out there, guys, I worked in the treatment business for 27 years. I got to tell you guys, there's so many people out there, especially family members, people that are not alcoholics. The sad part is a lot of alcoholics believe it too, that if we will finally get to a place where we really want to stop or need to stop, then we're going to be able to quit. See, if we can do that, this is a behavioral problem. If you can quit, there's a line in the book that says, and I'll paraphrase, if you can stop on a non-spiritual basis, you ain't one of us. I mean, Bill Wilson goes over and over, three different places. He talks about different kinds of drinkers. Bottom of page 20, top of page 21, he talks, we're going to talk about it tomorrow in First Step stuff. But, he makes a pretty clear point. There's a lot of people in AA that are not even real alcoholics. They don't have to do the work. And they're nice people, and they're welcome. I just wish they would not talk so much. Real alcoholics. Going back to AA, guys, trying to do what was right, working in the business, I'd go to these same places up there in Denton, Texas. They were the nicest people on earth, guys. I don't want to ever paint a picture that these people were anything but sweethearts to me. There's enough love to choke a horse in these rooms. But this was back in the early 80s, guys, when I'm trying to get sober. And treatment centers are cranking them out by the gazillions. And we had these meetings, early 70s, we came up with this open discussion thing. And it was a Grapevine article that talked about a great place to bring your problems. There's a line in the book that talks about it. One night a week for the newcomer to bring their problems. I think that's such a great idea. Hell, I'll give you 3 nights a week. We're going to talk about your problems. Okay. 3 nights a week, you can come talk about your dead cat. After that, we're going to talk about we're going to talk about God. We're going to talk about the steps. And nobody takes my suggestion. These meetings were something else, guys. They were these absolute sweethearts. And I'd walk back in, I'm drunk again, I'd pick up another desire chip, and then we would go around the room and tell, how our lives, how we got to AA as first step meeting. And there were nobody's trying to hurt me, guys, but y'all remember, I'm not getting drunk driving charges. I've never robbed a liquor store. I never took my clothes off in public. One time I did, but that just once. And I can't relate to some of this stuff. And I'm just sitting there. I can sit in the room and listen to these stories for just so long, and then I will build a case against you. We've seen it 1,000 times. My friend Charlotte says it. She said, sitting in the rooms waiting to be offended. Any of y'all ever done that? Just waiting for somebody to say something to piss you off so you can leave, because I'm not getting better, guys. I'll come into these rooms and I'll sit and I'll start doing good. I'll feel better. I'll detox. And then gradually, my MO is about 2 weeks. The depression starts to come back, all the internal stuff. And I just can't stand it. Pretty soon, the obsession kicks my butt again, and I'm making an excuse to go drink. And I did that for 7 years, guys, in and out. Never picked up a 30-day chip in all the years I'm in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll take full responsibility. I don't own a big book. I've never had a sponsor. But I'm a meeting-making fool. If I could click my finger and get rid of one thing in Alcoholics Anonymous, y'all want to know what it would be? I probably shouldn't say this. but I'd get rid of that bumper sticker, 90 meetings in 90 days. I hate it. Yeah, too many people. This idea that if I go to a meeting every day, I'm going to be able to stay sober. Yeah, some of you are applauding. Some of you just left the room. I know. I'm sorry. Just that's the way it goes. You got to go to meetings. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Anyway, I'm going and I can't stay sober. I'm working for my brother eventually. I can't cook anymore. I'm just too banged up. And great opportunity to work with him. Myers and I are thick as thieves. We always have been. And he let me work in the warehouse there in the bindery, and loved it. I worked there for, 7-8 years. And I got sober there. And it was pretty cool. We were best drinking buddies. We'd work. And after work, we'd get together and go work in the garden and drink and cook and drink. And it was, here we go, you know. And but gradually this thing called depression is kicking my butt, and I'm a mess. I've gone to IOP. I'm trying to get sober, and counselors trying to explain why I can't get sober. I just trying to blame everything on the outside why I can't get sober. And the truth of the matter is I won't do the things that I'm supposed to do in the program. In defense of me and some of y'all, I'm told it was just keep coming back. Well, I kept doing it. And I don't know. One night I left work and I remember, you know how, y'all remember when you used to drink, when you first drank, how your tolerance was so high? The illness travels different in different people. And, you know, it can travel real fast in some and not. But I mean, my tolerance levels, I used to go drink at the bars where Myers used to attend. I mean, people would sit around and watch me drink because, buddy, I could pack it away. Towards the end of my drinking, I couldn't drink two beers, three beers, and I'm slurring my words. And it's just that your tolerance levels will start dropping back off again. That's how a lot of us end up in treatment. A lot of us end up, you know, trying to, and that's where I am, guys. There's a great line in the book that says, you're going to get to a place where you can't imagine life living with it, or you can't imagine life living without it. It's on page 152, I think. And it's just, that was where I was at. I wasn't enjoying it like I, you know, that little window where it was fun was very narrow. And then it's just the drinking, the nightmare, you know, and not a happy camper. I came home one night from work and I was off about 4 o'clock. And picked up a stack of return checks in the mail and stuff, went and got a 12 pack of Black Label. I don't even know if they still make that stuff either. Rot Gut beer is what it was. And I went back up to my little apartment. I had two ferrets in there. Boy, that apartment stunk like hell. And they were sweetheart. I still love ferrets. If they didn't stink so bad, I'd have them now. They're the cutest could be. But open these old return checks. They used to send them to you in individual envelopes so you could open them ceremoniously. And, you know, I just bankrupted another checking account. I'm going to have to go to the nicest sister-in-law anybody ever had, Myers' wife. And I'm going to have to borrow some money and so I'll clean up my checking account again. I'm 35 years old and I'm just done, guys. I'm not talented like Myers. I'm never going to be a success at bookbindery. And I'm living in a town I don't want to be in. And I got no girlfriend and I got no career anymore. And I'm drinking myself to death. And I've tried AA. It didn't work. And I tried to commit suicide. And stupid. You know how God intervenes. It's so close. I took a couple of bottles of pills and ate them down. And about the time they hit my stomach, I had second thought. I believe I heard a voice that night that said, don't do it. I made myself sick. And boy said, go back to AA. And this in my, I'm made a commitment to go back. And I'm convinced. Well, the next day I was running late from work. I'm detoxing. I went to a doctor at lunchtime and I'm detoxing and I'm heading home and I'm going to stop off at this AA club I'd never been to before. This guy had shown me years ago. He'd show me where it was. And he said it was a big book meeting. Again, I don't know what that is, but it doesn't sound very good. Bunch of, you know, recovery zealots in there or something. But I walked in the door. Some of y'all heard me tell this story 1,000 times, but I can't not tell it. I parked in the back so nobody would know who I was coming back to AA. And like I was anonymous. All you needed to do was look at my pickup and see that I was a drunk. I was just, oh my God, I was a mess. Myers sent me a picture not long ago with that old pickup truck. It was the coolest. And walked in the back and it was everybody was smoking and having a good old time in there. And this was back in the day. We could smoke at every AA meeting on earth. And we ruined it for you new guys. But anyway, and the chairperson had seen me up in North Texas for years and waved. He said, Chris, come on up here with me. And I got real self-conscious, guys. I got it. I there's just too many people in there, and I'm coming unglued a little bit. I'm a little claustrophobic anyway, and they're all loud and smoking, and I just like I got about, I don't know, 10 feet in, and I says, I gotta go. I'll see y'all Monday. I'll come back. I'm gonna go home and detox for a while. And I took a step back. I stepped on this little girl's foot. She drugged me back down in a chair, and she said, "Sit down, cowboy." She's a sweetheart. She said, "Sit down, cowboy. You're not going anywhere." And her sponsor across the way and couldn't get to me and pointed, and she got me. Thank God. I still get emails, guys. Y'all think I'm making it up. I used to save them. Emails from all over the world. People hear these CDs and then me talking about that. And she said, in Germany, men sponsor men and women sponsor women. We'll talk about that tomorrow too, guys. This little girl didn't sponsor me. She stopped me from leaving the room. If it hadn't been for her, I don't know what I would have done. She got me a cup of coffee and a paper towel to clean it up. I kept spilling it. I'm shaking like a leaf. And chairperson, I got to tell you guys, the chairperson looked at the wall. I'll never forget. He glanced up. He was looking at the steps on the wall. And then he looked back at me for a second and just kind of got quiet. He's fixing to start the meeting. And he said, "We got a newcomer coming back in here. Chris been around for a while. Why don't we tell Chris how our lives have changed as a result of working the steps?" See, I never heard that. In all the years I'd been in AA, I never heard that as a topic. What I heard 1,000 times was, "Let's tell Chris how we got here." Okay, which means everybody's going to go around and talk about how many drunk driving charges they've gotten, how many people they chopped up, put in plastic bags. It just drives me crazy. If they had done that, I'd have left. I don't know, guys. I know how you got here. I know how I got here. I drank too much. All right. Those people that night gave me the one thing I needed more than anything. It was about 24 hours from my suicide attempt. And these guys gave me the one thing I needed, which was hope. And they went around the room, guys, and there was a guy across the way that started a little landscape business, and he had a little truck outside. And, you know, it was just lady at the end of the table that had car keys, and she'd got a little car loan. And I just got turned down 2 weeks ago at my little bank for a car loan and trying to get some. Got lady at the end of the table had a sketch pad, and she'd gone back to school. She was a sculptor, and she was just, you know, she was doing some artwork. They talked about all the cool stuff they were doing because they had entered this thing called a spiritual way of living. And I don't know. It was pretty cool. It was a pep rally. I get those same emails from people. "You think every meeting should be a pep rally?" Yes, I do. I'm sorry, I do. One thing that we got, if you need therapy, go find it. Go get a trained one, somebody that knows what they're doing. I love it when you go into an AA meeting and you want to tell somebody, "Well, I'm having trouble in my relationship." You know, yeah. And then you ask the guy that's been married 5 times for advice. Like, forget it. You know, I'm not interested. God, I want to go find a real somebody. I'm not saying you can't be helped by people in AA, guys. Trust me, you can. I had a marriage one time with a little stepson involved, and I talked to every person that ever had a kid to learn what I was doing, buddy, because I got in over my head quick. It was pretty cool. These old guys stopped me at the end of the day. They asked me if I wanted to stay sober, you know, a day at a time, and I said, absolutely. And they gave me going to be my last chip. And I picked it up, and I was heading to the car, and they said, "Chris, no, come back. Just sit with us for a few minutes." And they opened it and said, "Stay with us for a minute. Let's help me. Maybe we can figure out why you can't stay sober." And, guys, I'll never forget it. We didn't sit down for 2 hours. I see people do that all the time, sit down and just let me wear that little newcomer out. They sat down with me for 15 or 20 minutes, and they opened exactly what Doug was talking about. They opened to the front of the book where we used to have that circle triangle in the front of our book, and they showed me all three parts of the program. And they explained to me about the, you know, recovery, the 12 steps and unity, the meetings, and then the service piece, working with others. And they said, "Chris, that's why you can't stay sober. You got a 3-part illness, and we got a 3-part program designed to treat it, and you're in exactly maybe 1 part. You go to a lot of meetings. It's like, and you wonder why you can't stay sober." They said, "Come stick with us, buddy." And they opened a book, and they showed me the physical craving and the mental obsession that night. We didn't start on the title page and read, folks. Nowhere in the book does it say, dude. It just said, we qualify the alcoholic. Guys, I went home that night with tears in my eyes, because it dawned on me that the obsession to use had lifted. I mean, that almost just like that, because I had made a commitment to do this. And I knew what was wrong with me for the first time. The next morning, I went to the Saturday morning meeting, and we went in the back afterwards and chased a bunch of ladies out of the Al-Anon room and got on our knees and did a little third step prayer. And went to eat some Mexican food and came back, and they gave me a little notebook, and they said, let's start on that old four step. And they showed me how to start making my list in a four step. Bam, bam, bam. Those guys saved my life, folks. One of the things we'll talk about tomorrow. But I got to tell you, folks, the thing I want to make real clear tonight, and we will talk more about it tomorrow, but these guys got me really, really active in the fellowship there. Again, before trying to get sober, there was the nicest people on earth, but I'd just come in and I'd sit alone in my head. These guys understood it. It's if I sat there long enough, I was going to build a case against you guys and talk myself into doing something stupid. I wasn't going to choose to drink. I was just going to go crazy, and the obsession was going to come back. And these guys got me busy that first weekend, folks. They got me busy helping out around the club a little bit. By Sunday, they had me answering the phone at the club. You know, Chris, if the phone rings, you answer it. You know, and they showed me how to do that. They didn't just turn me loose. Yeah. 2 weeks into this deal, we got a group conscience next week, and they nominated me for the cleanup chairman at that group. And they figured since I was in the food business, I know how to clean a kitchen, then maybe I could be useful. Anyway, I didn't think anybody would vote because nobody knew who I was. And I went to my first group conscience. I'll never forget it. All those years, I went to my first group conscience, and those knuckleheads railroaded me. It was a unanimous vote as cleanup chairman. And after the meeting, I asked them for a list of the people on my committee so that we could organize the cleaning, and they spit coffee. I mean, literally all over the floor. They're laughing so hard. They said, Chris, there's no committee. You're it. You are the cleanup chairman. That means I was so bummed. I thought I was going to have a staff. But I'll never forget, a couple of days later, Myers let me off work, and I went over there, and they gave me keys to the place. And I went over there one afternoon about 1 o'clock, and the next meeting's at 6 o'clock, folks. And I mean, I got in there and I cleaned that club like a big dog. I know how to clean it. My wife may argue with that, but I know how to clean a kitchen and spotless. And I clean those, I vacuumed in the whole bit anyway. I'm sitting back in there about 30 minutes before the meeting, and I got a pot of coffee going, and I'm sitting in there soaking sweat. I'm just wet, my little t-shirt. I've been busting my butt. And this lady comes in, and she was the matriarch of the group. I don't know how old. She was older than Jesus when I got sober. I don't know how, but she'd been there forever. And she walked in, and I could hear her in the kitchen like that. She was gasping. I heard her walk back to the bathroom, turn the light on. Oh, my God. And she turned back around the corner and came back into that meeting room. And she said, did you clean this place? And I said, you know, yes, ma'am. And she walked around behind me like that. She got her little bony arm around my neck, and she gave me a little back hug. And she said, boy, we need you. Mm-hmm. Y'all realize how long it had been since anybody had said, we need you? I'm weeks away from a suicide attempt because I felt completely useless. I don't know, guys. They hooked me. Those old timers, I have so much reverence for those people that were there, and the men and women that were there, guys, young sobriety, old sobriety in that group. And they raised me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm 35, and I'd learned to date in Alcoholics Anonymous, not stalk, date. You know, it's different. And I learned so much. And I started a little business. Myers gave me a little spot on the shop floor to let me start a little business there, a little screen print business. And I had the opportunity to go to school for it. And it was pretty good. I never made a penny at the job. You know, I was a complete failure. But I got excited about my life. And I didn't have any of those old timers. I see it in Alcoholics Anonymous. It breaks my heart. I see so many groups out there, so many people that they spend so much time with a newcomer telling them what they can't do. You can't make any major decisions for the first year. That's not what the big book says. It says, be careful. Talk to somebody about it. You can't date for the first year. Who came up with that crap? Oh, in case y'all didn't hear me, that's crap. It makes us look cultish. It makes us look stupid. I'm not drinking because of women. I'm drinking because I don't work the steps. You work the steps, you'll have a spiritual experience, and there's not a woman on earth that can get you drunk. Guys, that's the cool part about it. We're talking about a solution. Nothing external has to change for me to be okay. I have to change. And I can't change myself. This is that spiritual connection. I don't know. I'm lucky I landed in a room full of those people that understood that. And they loved me, guys. And I just, there weren't a bunch of people. I mean, guys, there's no don'ts in the big book. They didn't sit around telling me what I couldn't do. They told me what I could do. So get out there and start enjoying life. Get out there and start doing exactly what Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob did. Today was, somebody sent me a text earlier. Today was Bill Dodson's AA birthday. AA number 3 got sober today. I don't know how many, 1935. And Bill Wilson was the first guy he had after Dr. Bob and them get sober. And I mean, how cool is this? He'd been back to treatment 8 times. This guy had been to detox, and these guys got hold of him. And this old boy finally got sober. I mean, how cool is that? It didn't happen by osmosis. Tomorrow, late afternoon, we're going to be doing some 12-step stuff. And I'm going to tell you guys, none of this stuff happened by osmosis. It just didn't happen. I get emails from everybody. You just finally wanted to stay sober. That's why you got sober. That's not true. I got sober because a bunch of people in an AA group actually gave a poot if I heard the message or not. They didn't foster some false dependence on them. They explained to me that the dependence was on a higher power. It was, and that if I would work the 12 steps, that obsession would go away. That's why they worked me through them very quickly, just like Bill Wilson did, just like Dr. Bob did, just like Bill D did, just like all the first 100. None of those guys were taking longer than a few weeks to work the steps. The guy that brought Alcoholics Anonymous to Texas, a guy named Larry Jewell, he had never been to a single meeting. He had to get out of Ohio because it was too damn cold up there. And he had a job in Houston and newspaper. And they put him on a train, handing him a book and said, go save some folks. And he went to Houston and wrote some articles about Alcoholics Anonymous and started the first meeting in Houston, Texas. And all the other little meetings started from there. How cool is that? They didn't tell him just, I'm not going to beat it to death. Y'all understand where I'm going with it, right? Action, action, and more action. Get in there and work the steps and then go help carry that message to them little knuckleheads that needed our help. Big book, 1942, there was a letter that Bill Wilson wrote. There's an excerpt from it and As Bill Sees It. And we have these little stickers. Some of you got them on the backs of your books. I can see them in there. It says, our chief responsibility to the newcomer is an adequate presentation of the program. And if there's one thing in my little sobriety life that was instilled in me from my first sponsor, Mark H. was my sponsor for a whole bunch of years. And when he passed away, I got a guy named Gary B. in Indianapolis, a wonderful man, you know. But they all shared the same stuff with me, that our responsibility was that little newcomer. Gary and Don P., all of those guys were in that. Exactly what Ali was talking about, that first little bunch of golden slippers over in Denver, and those ideas of the idea of actually working the steps. And I mean, it's hard to believe that there was periods of time in Alcoholics Anonymous when nobody was working the steps. And Bill Wilson saw it. He saw it, started seeing the success rates drop back through the toilet. He talks about it. He writes about it. We could talk about that tomorrow. They're back up again now because we got whole rooms of people just like y'all, little big book thumpers out there carrying the message and slinging some hope for that newcomer. We're actually making a difference, folks. I'm seeing more and more people come in and get into rock solid sobriety because there's a whole bunch of people that actually care. So a whole bunch of people that actually want to get in there and try to do something to be of service. And each of us in our own way, guys, are going to do that. I mentioned this, and for so many years, guys, even once I got sober, was in that group in Louisville, at times my head would start playing games with me. Some of y'all have heard this voice in your head, and it would be the voice that would say, you know, Chris, you're not sober long enough to sponsor. You are not smart enough to chair that meeting. You are that self-hate stuff, that negative crap. We hear it all the time, guys. And if it's reinforced by an old timer in the group that says, yeah, you probably ought to wait a while to chair a meeting, you're never going to do it. You got to get in there, guys. It doesn't mean we turn them loose. Those old timers, guys, they say, Chris, it's about time you chaired a meeting. And I asked me one Saturday morning to read how it works. And I said, I won't, because I'm afraid I'm going to mess it up. Y'all follow? I'm afraid I'm going to screw it up and then y'all will laugh. And today, I mean, God, you know, we all laugh at each other for heaven's sake. But they said, the guy, he pissed him off and he left the meeting and I went outside, are you okay? And he says, no, I'm tired of you being a taker. He said, you've been a taker all your life. He says, when are you going to start giving back? He wasn't mad. He wasn't trying to be hurtful, but he's just telling me the truth. Guys, there are people that love me enough to tell me that. And I says, okay. He said, next Saturday, will you read? I said, yes, sir, I will. And I went home and I practiced. Oh my God, guys. I had that book and I'd sit up and I'd sit in front of the, y'all think I'm making this crap up. And I'd sit in front of the mirror and rarely have we seen a person fail who is thoroughly, I mean, I'm this dramatic license. I mean, rarely have, no, that won't work. I mean, I'm practicing like this all week long. I could memorize it. And I'm sitting there Saturday morning and I'm ready to read. Okay, we got the guys like that. Y'all ready? And I got, and he handed me the stupid traditions. God, I hadn't practiced the traditions. And I got in there and I read those traditions and I screwed them up. And oh my God. And everybody laughed just like y'all are doing. It was okay, guys. They taught me, stop taking yourself so seriously. You're going to make mistakes. Not in just in AA, but in life. It's okay. Get in there and help where you can help, folks. Chair a meeting, get on a committee, make coffee, do something to be a part of this, and your life will change, folks. 2 months in, I get my first sponsee. That little spiritual warfare again. I'm not sober long enough. I'm not sober. Yes, you are. You absolutely are. Talk to your sponsor. We'll walk you right straight through it. We'll show you how to do it. Because by giving it away, you get to keep it. Not only by giving it away, you get to get it. That's what we do. That's about the bottom line, guys. The spiritual warfare that says that you can't help anybody, it needs to be dashed. Stop listening to that. Jump in the middle. It's the only thing you're going to do. How many of y'all remember doing anything? It's just awkward. First time I got on a bicycle, I'm a competitive cyclist. First time I ever got on a bicycle, I thought I felt so stupid it wasn't even funny. Guys, it's time to get on a bicycle. Time to start painting pictures. Time to start learning how to speak another language. Time to go to school. Go back to school. Talking to a lady the other day. Chris, I'm 65. I can't go back to school. Why? Well, hell, I'll be 69 by the time I graduated. So what? You'll be 64, 69. You'll be 69 with a degree. I mean, how cool is that? Stop telling yourself what you can't do, guys. My experience is that if you get in there and get excited about your life, guys, you're gonna do okay. Boredom and self-pity are the two things that kill alcoholics. My experience, boredom and self-pity. Get in there and get excited about what we're doing, guys, because I got to tell you, all hands on deck. I'm sure Myers and I will get a chance to talk more about this tomorrow. I'm going to close with this. This little thing, that little virus thing that we got floating around that some people don't think is real. God dang. Bunch of us have been quarantined. We've been set aside. I've been working every day in the hospitals. Every treatment center that I stay in touch with, that I network with, I got a lot of people that work in the industry. Every hospital out there is full. Everybody was not full at the very beginning. And everybody got out there and started isolating, sitting at home. What's the one thing that we tell alcoholics and little addicts not to do is isolate. That's why we need to come to meetings. And a lot of these guys that have refused to do Zooms, they're not, I mean, the meetings are closed down. What are they going to do? They're sitting at home getting in trouble. And a lot of these people are coming back in. I'll say it now. Every person that's in this little gathering, we need you. We need you in the trench, helping us carry the message in your own way, because they're coming at us by the thousands, hundreds of thousands. These folks out there that have relapsed, they're all coming back in. And I tell you guys, I've only seen one other time when we had this many folks come into the fellowship. One other time. And that was 25 years ago. Well, it's coming fast, guys. So everybody that absolutely needs that, you know, come on with us. I'm going to end up on this chat room. I'm going to end up putting my email on there. I don't do the chats as much because I can't if I can't talk and get in there. So I miss some of the things, but if any of y'all want to get in hold of us, I've got some handouts that I can send y'all tomorrow at workshop time. And if any of y'all are interested in all that, I would be more than glad to email you back and forth. It'd be an honor. I'm sure Myers will do the same thing. We sure like to stay in touch. Tomorrow when we do this little workshop, we'll start off with it in the morning. I'm going to do first step about 9 o'clock, I think, my time, your time. I forget what it is. What the heck? Yeah, it's 10 o'clock Eastern time. I'll do first step stuff. But I'm going to mention what we're going to try to accomplish tomorrow is we're not going to talk this. Somebody was asking today. We're not going to do this in-depth, take it line by line, split hairs, take a dictionary out and study. There's plenty of time to do that. If any of you guys are interested, I can give you a bunch of studies that are out there. Guys, I'm more interested in the thing that's causing so many people discomfort in our fellowship is how do you take somebody through the work in a timely manner? Our idea is that how do you take that little newcomer through the steps quickly? Because we're killing them out there going through them slowly. There's a clock that's ticking, guys. I hear old timers all the time. I hear new timers. This is not a race. It absolutely is a race. When the obsession comes back, they're going to go do something stupid. So I know Myers and I, we've done this before together. And our little focus is going to be on trying to simplify this whole process as simple as we can get it. So by all means, if any of y'all come up with questions during the day tomorrow and you want to email us, I'll be checking emails too while we're doing this. And maybe we can answer some of those questions for you. This ought to be fun. And I'm sure looking forward to seeing y'all tomorrow and looking forward to hearing Myers in about 15, 20 minutes. So thank you guys so much. Appreciate y'all letting me share.